What is up, Love Tribe? What's going on?
Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Chase and Sarah here.
Yeah, and if this is the first time you've listened to the show, welcome. And if you've listened before, welcome back.
Yeah, and today we have a great show. I really enjoyed it. It was the first time we covered this topic, and it's an important one, and that is being authentic. And really, and we talk about gender roles and identity, but really talk about becoming your authentic self. And that's going to improve the intimacy in your relationship if you're in a relationship, or if you're single, it's going to help you find the right person that's going to love you for who you are. And it's easy to say, yeah, be authentic, just be your true self. But it's a thing that is constantly something we need to work on. And some of us have never really looked inwards, and or just very little. And it's just a never ending process. And I talk about my newest kick in the show of ecstatic dance. I won't go on because I do it plenty during the show, but I'm really excited about it. And I suggest you check it out. You'll hear me talk about it in the show with Ken Page. And Ken is our guest, and he is a licensed psychotherapist and popular Psychology Today blogger and author of the bestseller Deeper Dating, How to Drop the Games of Seduction and Discover the Power of Intimacy. And he has a new podcast that will be coming out in November, the Deeper Dating Podcast. And Ken was just a great guest and gave us a lot of valuable ways to explore our authentic self, to share it with our partner, and just enjoy and participate in that journey.
Yeah, and he gave us a lot of great exercises and links. So as always, those will be on the show notes page on our website at idpodcast.com. And thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoy today's episode. Today's show is brought to you by our online course, Spark My Relationship. Create more passion, improve your communication, and build a stronger, more intimate connection with your partner in less than 90 days. We've collaborated with 15 therapists and psychologists to bring you the strategies marriage therapists teach their clients. To unlock a special offer only for I Do Podcast listeners, visit sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. That's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. Hi, Ken. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Hi, Sarah and Chase. I am honored and delighted to be here.
Ken, we've given our listeners a little bit of information on your professional background, and we'd like to start by having you tell us and our listeners why you enjoy helping people improve their relationships.
Oh, yes. Well, that's, you know, I would say that intimacy has been the big subject of my life for two reasons. One, because I have cared about it so much, and two, because I haven't been so good at it. And I've had to do a lot of work and a lot of learning. And I guess three is that I'm a psychotherapist and a coach, as well as a podcast host and a writer. So, you know, it's just an area that really matters to me. And for me, I spent decades being single, what I called chronically single, and really wanting to be in a relationship and just not finding the ability to do that. And so I had to go on a really big journey of growth. And I know what it's like for people to want love and not be able to find it. And I also know what it's like for people to be in a relationship where there has been love or there still is love, but they feel like something is missing and they want a richer, deeper, more authentic connection. So I've been in all those places, and I work with people in all those places, because I just think that at the end of the day, it really is our relationships that matter the most, including our relationship with ourselves. So that's why this has been such an exciting kind of area of interest for me, and why I've begun a podcast that also just specializes in the search for love for people who want to kind of approach that in a deeper, wiser, more research-backed way. Oh, and I will say one other thing, too, which is I'm a gay man. And so as a gay man, particularly around what we're going to be talking about today. The whole issue of gender roles and intimacy is one that has been a really important part of my life.
Relationships are really, as you said, the most important things in our life with others and with ourselves. And you kind of let us in there, and we're very interested to talk about today's subject, and that is gender roles and the stereotypes and how they affect our relationships. So why don't we start with how we might not even realize that this is going on, and then I'd love to dissect the sense of self and authenticity, and there's a lot to unpack here. So maybe we can start with how the gender role stereotypes can negatively affect you if you're single or if you're already in a relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a really important thing to talk about. And I just want to say zoom out to a very high level view of the situation in our culture. And that is that we're kind of in between two worlds now. We come from a history of very, very rigid gender roles. Men cannot wear pink. Men cannot be vulnerable. Men cannot share feelings. Women cannot be powerful. Women cannot be assertive. And all of the millions of beliefs that kept us safe and profoundly limited for so long, not to mention oppressed, both women and men. And now we're in the middle of change, and there's this message that's coming out, which is you can be who you are. You can be a man and be deeply in touch with your vulnerable feelings. You can be a woman and be very, very empowered and successful. These are all very exciting messages, but we're in between worlds, and that's a hard place to be. So guys get this message of, yeah, you need to be sensitive. You need to be vulnerable. That's the only way you're going to be successful in a relationship. But don't be too vulnerable, because then you'll be a wimp. You won't be an alpha male anymore. And then forget it if you want to have anybody be attracted to you. And women, yes, be powerful, be strong at work, but not too intense and not too powerful. And when you come home or when you go on your date, you need to get back in touch with your femininity. So the message is like this. It's like the message to Columbus in a way. It was like, go out and explore the new world, but don't go too far because you might fall off the end of the earth. So we get these really mixed messages that just make it so hard to figure out what to do. It's like we have to hold our breath and yet breathe naturally, and it just doesn't work.
I love the analogy, and yeah, we certainly don't want to fall off the end of the world, but
right. No,
it
we
is
don't.
Worth exploring, and then we all know that the world is not flat. It is round, so we'll be okay to go with that.
Right.
But I think it is such an important topic, and I like the pulled out view, and we definitely want to get more specific. But when I read your article on the gender role stereotypes and how it's crippling our love lives, I immediately thought of not just gender roles, but just because within that is our sense of self, and it's like who we are. And you touched on it, but culture is shaping that. Culture says you need to be a masculine man, but not a man, but you need to be vulnerable. And that's all our culture. And with the information available with podcasts, articles, like you said, that shift is occurring, and it's a beautiful thing. And I know just personally, I've been able to explore. I don't think I ever got wrapped up necessarily in gender roles too much that I was aware of, because certainly there's subconscious things just from being raised and that, you know, man's supposed to be this way, but there's degrees. And so what I'm getting at is I just love to be able to examine the gender roles, but then you can even go deeper in examining who you are and what your likes and dislikes are, and really trying to explore that inner space. So we talk about exploring outer space and definitely in the physical world, but then inside ourselves. And I've just been on a bit of a trip lately trying to do that. Last week, Sarah and our daughter went out of town for basically 48 hours. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go. And I wanted to do ecstatic dance. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. And then I wanted to do float tank. And both of them are ways like personal exploration. And we can dive into that. But it was just, it was great. And it kind of opened up this side of me that I knew was there, but I wanted to explore. And I can go on, but can you talk a little bit about just the greater exploration of the self within these gender roles and society?
Oh, that's great. That was so beautifully stated. Yeah, I'd love to do that. And something that I want to say, and this is in my role as a psychotherapist that this mostly comes out of, and it connects to what you said, Chase, is that there's a tremendous reward for doing this work of breaking out of what I call the electrified tripwires of gender taboo, invisible electrified tripwires of gender taboo. Because, you know, you don't know sometimes until you cross over it that you start feeling really weird or like you're breaking a rule or something like that. Other times you know it clearly. But what I have found is this, that all of us embody the whole spectrum of what's called masculine and feminine energy. And the researchers actually speak about it differently because they try not to link it directly to gender. What they talk about is instrumentality and expressiveness. So instrumentality is kind of directness, leadership, bluntness, empowerment, success, things like that. And expressive is qualities of collaboration and tenderness and vulnerability and receptivity. And the research just shows really fascinating things. It shows that couples who can go into spaces where they have similarity in their gender roles are more happily married. And that relationships where, heterosexual relationships where the men are very, very stereotypically masculine and the women are stereotypically very feminine, those couples feel less understanding, less love, and less contentment. And it's the couples with non-traditional gender roles who actually, interestingly, seem to have the more satisfying sex lives. So the thing about that and the thing that I've discovered is that when we get brave enough to step out past those electrified tripwires of what we think we're supposed to be, and we value whatever we're feeling authentically more than our gender roles, whatever it is that scares you to be, but you're feeling at the moment, when you let yourself feel it and embody it, something big happens inside. There's a sense of joy. There's a sense of empowerment. There's a sense of completeness. And all of a sudden, there's more availability for intimacy. It's kind of amazing how true that is. And so, you know, Chase, you just did a few different things that were outside of gender role, and they were joyful to you. And when we press down, when we suppress our authenticity in a relationship and in our lives, whether it's about gender role or anything else, it's not just an act of suppression. It's actually an act of quiet violence against ourself. And violence always begets violence. And when we do that to ourselves, we always end up in situations that end up hurting us or hurting other people. So it's a gift to ourselves and it's a gift to our loved ones for us to practice little by little gender role freedom as opposed to gender role rigidity.
So as a psychotherapist in today's world, how do we go about, I know we are changing as a society, but I see that there's still these super high expectations from both genders to kind of really still follow those gender roles. So how do we go about, or I guess, how would you tell our listeners to make that change in their relationship, or how to talk about those changes in the relationship with their partner so that they can feel comfortable being authentic with themselves?
Oh, I love that question. That's you know, that's really important and really nitty gritty. And I really do hope to give your listeners some good tools in this time that we have, because, you know, what's happening is like so many relationships are just being hamstrung by this, what I call, it's a modern brand of stealth sexism. So I'm going to speak in a few different levels here. First, I'm just going to talk to men, and I'm going to talk to women. And I'm going to talk to people who are transgender, too, who interestingly, amazingly, in some ways, really are leading the cutting edge around this new understanding of gender freedom and gender fluidity that we have. So one thing I want to say is I want to first speak to women. And I want to say that something I've experienced as a therapist and as a friend and as a coach is so many women who are powerful and embodied and accomplished and creative and bold and brave, doing great stuff in the world, who feel scared to show those qualities in their relationship. Literally feel like, I can't. Yeah, I know a woman who is in the media and won one of the biggest awards you can get. And she was going on a date, and she did not want to make a really big fuss about this because it's just not feminine, and how is she going to get an alpha male? And so you know, I think so many women have this fear that if they are too empowered, that they're going to lose the guy or lose the woman. And you know, there's even actually a pretty famous saying taught by, you know, one of the teachers in the field of romance, which is, women, leave your fake balls in the office, which kills me because there's just so much wrong with that concept. You know, first of all, equating empowerment with maleness and not femaleness, telling women how they have to feel and how they have to behave. And then the third problem is this. It's a really, really smart thing when you leave work to be able to kind of shift down to a more intimate space. But since when did that just become women's responsibility? That's the guy's responsibility, too. And that's the gift for both parties, when we can learn to get out of our work head and into our more romantic, sensual, emotional, just being present head. That's not just the women's job. That's the human job. So women, what I want to say to you is, all of the information that you have heard about what you're supposed to be like, junk it. Just junk it. And I'll give you a great example of this. Cheryl Richardson, who's a phenomenally successful writer, New York Times bestseller, writes wonderful spiritual self-help books. She's just fantastic. She's hugely successful. And when she met her husband-to-be, one of the first questions she asked him, and I love this, she did the opposite of kind of trying to hide her empowerment. She said, I just want to ask you what it would be like for you to be in a relationship with someone who is quite kind of profoundly successful. She was really blunt about it. And he said, I love that. And she knew he meant it. And so women, there are guys, women who kind of worry about if you're too much or too powerful. Yes, do the work on becoming vulnerable. That is all of our human jobs. But you want a guy who loves that about you, not who can bear it in short doses, who loves that about you. And I promise you that there are men out there who are competent and empowered in their own right who will love that about you. So that's what I want to say to women first. And now, as a guy, I want to talk to the guys, because it breaks my heart to see what men have been taught around this subject. I don't know who has it worse, men or women, in terms of this specific issue. Because I have heard so many guys say to me, I have to admit that I will never be an alpha male, and hence, I'm never going to attract the most beautiful women, or the most beautiful, exciting men. I'm never going to, like, have that it that a guy should have, and that's just a shame, but I have to live with it. And I'll never have the success I want, or the sex I want, or the excitement I want, or in this romantic arena, because I am not an alpha guy. I'm too tender. I'm too shy. I'm too introverted. I'm too vulnerable. And what I want to say to you guys is the same thing that I want to say to the women. I promise you, I give you my absolute word, that there are people out there, women, Orban, who will adore those exact attributes of yours. They are looking for someone like you. That's the thing about gender, folks, is one size does not fit all. This world is built in an astounding way that some people are attracted to different people than other people, people of all different weights. I know people who are profoundly obese who are in love with someone who just adores their size. And So, you know, the thing about you always have to be thin, that's not true either. The world is a much richer place, and attraction is a much richer thing than we've been taught to believe. So that's what I want to say first, is when, and I can say this in a really, really kind of simple way, when it comes down to a choice between gender conformity and authentic expression, go for authentic expression. Even when it's scary, and watch how your world opens up.
It's a great point, and I love just drilling down on authenticity. And it's easier said than done because, as we're talking, culture, and our genes, and the way we're raised, and the environment we're in, and the culture, all shape who we are. And I think we don't sometimes realize how much culture is shaping our views on everything, and certainly our self-identity and gender. And that's why hopefully people just hearing this, I know when I was exploring these things, and I might be listening to a podcast and it's a guy who is breaking those stereotypical roles. You know, Joe Rogan he's got probably, I think it's one of the biggest podcasts in the world as far as downloads. And he's a stereotypical, on the outside, male. He's a mixed martial artist. He commentates for the UFC. He's a hunter. He's like this big, strong guy. And you're like, yeah, he's just a meathead. But if you listen to his podcast, he's very much not that. And he's talking about things like this. He's very self-expressive and vulnerable. And I think that those kind of things help to shape our culture the other way, where now guys like myself and others, and the opposite is true for women. And I'm sure there's those figures in the gay community and everything that can open up our eyes. And I think hopefully people just hearing this are like, yeah, you know, I'm going to explore that. But then you have to do that inner work. And that's why I mentioned, and you've given us some great tools, but I think just doing things out of your comfort zone, you might like to be the alpha male. That might be like more of who you authentically are. But I feel like we don't know until we push the boundaries a little. And that's why I say this ecstatic dance. Have you ever done ecstatic dance, Ken?
I have, and okay. I love it.
Yeah, so I'm on this kick because I just did it last weekend. Sarah's
laughing. I feel
laughing.
Left out.
Yeah, Sarah needs to do it. But our listeners.
Great. Good for you. I got to get back to that.
It's
such a wonderful thing. I haven't done it since I became a dad 17 years ago.
Oh, wow. So you were early on. Well, since it's a little bit more fresh for me, I'm going to just describe it. It's simply put, it's dancing like no one is watching is kind of like the premise. And there's probably different versions, but there's an aspect of it's in a group setting and you're not really, there's certain kind of loose rules. Like you're not supposed to talk. You're not supposed to be dancing with other people without permission. And there's like nonverbal cues, but it's for, ours was like an hour and a half, and you chat with people. There's about 20, and then there's a DJ, if you want to call it that, and they're playing like pretty upbeat music, and there's highs and lows, and you're just supposed to just dance like our 3-year-old would dance, like however comes naturally. And what I really loved about it, and we're talking about authenticity, so many times we are worried about what other people think of us. And it's only natural, and I'm guilty of it. And what this exercise does is you're going to be resistant to it at first. Like you're kind of stiff and you're not wanting to let go. But as it goes on, like you feel more and more free. And by the end, like I'm spinning around and my arms are going everywhere. And it's just this beautiful thing of like exploring your mind and body and through a physical outlet, but it has a mental benefit of letting you let go. And when I feel that, I feel like you're getting more towards the authentic self and what we're drilling down on. So, and there's other means to do this, but I would really encourage, I can't wait to get Sarah out there, trying it, but as an exercise to explore your authentic self, to try a static dance. And, we'll have to link in the show notes to some place, resources, but I think there's a lot to be said about doing things like that, that are out of our comfort zones to explore our authentic selves.
But before we continue on, we want to tell you about today's sponsors.
Today's episode is brought to you by, and we've told you before, so you should know it by now, the little jingle, JJ Virgin 7-Day.
Stop, drop, swap, and challenge.
Oh, I didn't know Sarah was going to go for the rap, but that's how the jingle goes.
So we have done 2 challenges with you guys, and if you haven't done the challenge with us yet, you need to, because the challenge is the, like we said, JJ Virgin 7-Day Stop, Drop, and Swap Challenge, and it is designed to help you stop classic symptoms of food intolerances and drop up to 7 pounds in 7 days by swapping out the 7 problem foods for healthy, tasty alternatives.
If you just want to not have as much gas, don't eat dairy.
That's dairy, what else? Gluten, soy, eggs, peanuts, corn, and sweetener. Those are the 7 bad guys.
Yeah, and they're going to help you shed some pounds, maybe, if you got some pounds to shed, decrease headaches, help with skin trouble, fatigue, joint pain, or digestive issues.
And if this is the first time you've heard about the JJ Virgin, the 7-Day Challenge, it involves swapping out the problem foods like cow's milk and bread for healthier versions like coconut milk or lettuce wraps. Plus, you'll drink 2 delicious smoothies a day and 1 traditional meal. And they offer tons of recipes and guides to help you alter the challenge if you're eating vegan or paleo or feeding a family.
You can sign up for free anytime by going to jjvirgin.com/I do. Make sure you use that URL so they know that we sent you and gave you the cool little jingle that made you go, I got to sign up. And this challenge lasts only 7 days. So it's super easy. No excuses. Just try it. Again, that's jjvirgin.com/I do to sign up for the free challenge.
Today's episode is also sponsored by Babbel.
Hola, Sarah. ¿Cómo estás?
Bien, usted.
Muy bien. you have been practicing.
I have been. Not every night, but I am getting there and my Spanish is improving. And I will be speaking fluent Spanish before we get back to Costa Rica.
Yeah, we put you on the spot during last week's episode because you haven't been on it as much.
But, I know, I'm slacking.
But you're getting there.
I am.
You're using Babbel, which is the #1 selling language learning app in the world. Not only can you learn Spanish, but you can learn French, Italian, German, Russian, Swedish, and more.
So I've been using the Babbel app to do the lessons, which are about 10 to 15 minutes long. And I found it super helpful to do it right before bed. So it's like in my brain while I'm sleeping, like I'm really learning Spanish. Is that a thing?
Probably. Yeah. And then, you know, once you start dreaming in Spanish, that's when you know you really got it.
The app is super easy and it's designed to help you speaking confidently in your new language within weeks. So we'll be back in Costa Rica in about 2 weeks, so I should be fluent by then, right?
Practice more and you'll get it.
You can try Babbel for free. Go to babbel.com or download the app and try it for free. That's Babbel, BABBEL.com, or download the app to try it for free. Babbel.com.
Yeah, Chase, I really want to stick with that because there's so many pieces in that that branch out into such rich understandings. So just some of the things you said that I just want to follow up on. So when you do that kind of dance, I'm going to speak about myself. When I do that kind of dance, I have moments where I hit an electrified tripwire. I'm really aware of it. So I'm dancing, and then I want to do this movement that's really ballet and feels really feminine. And I could feel that, you know, that's going to be really feminine. That's going to be embarrassing. And at that moment, am I going to just say, what the hell, and do it anyway? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. More and more, yes. Sometimes when I dance, I have movements that feel so strong and so grounded and so powerful that they scare me a little bit. The power and the groundedness and the ferocity or solidity or muscularity of those movements kind of also scares me, and I feel another tripwire there. And ultimately, like you're saying, Chase, those tripwires are more than just about gender. They're about the fear of our own tenderness and our own power. And the way that we become better human beings is learning to embrace those parts of ourselves. Of course, you know, our tenderness with self-honoring, not being stepped on, and our power with an awareness that we want to honor and dignify others and not step on them. But you can feel it there. And another place you can feel it that this leads right into is sex. And everybody, I just encourage you to think, when you're with your partner, what kind of things hit that little electrified tripwire where you go, that's too dominant for me, or that's too submissive for me, or that's just way too tender, or that's just way too wild. And we cannot just bust on through that stuff. We're human, and it's tender, and it's sensitive. But what I have to say to everybody is a little goes a long way. You hit one of those tripwires, and you commit to going a drop further, and you will feel the blossoming of your humanity by going one drop further than you're used to. And so we always have situations like that. The next time you're in a conversation and you notice that you're hitting a kind of place where you're either going to be too, let's say, using these terms, instrumental or expressive, and you feel a little bit of a pullback, practice going there because you are going to become more amazing. And here's the other thing. When you do that, you will be more available for intimacy, romance, sexual heat, and sexual tenderness. So there's a tremendous benefit, and dance is such a metaphor for all of that.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. Although I haven't done a dance class with Chase yet, it seems that it can be so parallel to our real world and using the idea of really taking yourself out of your comfort zone in this dance class can equal over to real life scenarios and kind of putting yourself in that situation to get yourself out of your comfort zone in real life situations.
Exactly, exactly. And I can't wait to hear about what it's like when you guys do it together and what that's like. That sounds great. And you both might even have, I don't know, you might have a little bit of self-consciousness seeing your beloved, seeing you stretching out in certain ways. But that's part of the joy of intimacy. And the research shows that when you do stuff with your partner that scares you a little bit, it's going to intensify the love between the two of you.
Yeah,
there's great research on that.
Yep, and trying new things, and I'm telling you this. It's fresh in my mind, so I'm on this kick. But I think we're definitely going to talk about it more on the show. And I'm sure there's other things, but the ecstatic dance is just. You mentioned that it those tripwires, and it's basically taking. It's like exercising that muscle. You could schedule it on your calendar. Certainly we want to try to do it in our everyday lives, but if you can schedule, okay, there's a static dance, like I'm going to be uncomfortable. I don't care who, it'd be hard to envision a person. I'm sure there's some people that would just go into their first one and just be like, yes, and immediately. But I think most of us carry a certain weight in a certain reservations about just letting go. And this practice of ecstatic dance is like putting those tripwires everywhere and just inserting you into that situation to feel them. And you said, you know, I might want to do like a ballet move. And I totally experience that. Not necessarily a ballet move, but just that feeling, that tripwire of like, okay, like I feel I'm getting a little crazy here. I'm spinning, and how must I look to the others? And that's why it's important that it's in a group setting. But then going, okay, you know what? Who cares? You know, and I'm going to explore this. And it's really has such profound benefits, to do that, whether it's in a dance class, like I'm talking about, or just in the next conversation you have with your partner of like, you know, I get a little squeamish when we talk about sex and it's a little bit hard, but I think a lot of growth in relationship and within ourselves come at those tripwires, like you're saying. That's where the magic is. And we could just step back and say, oh, no, I'm not going near there. Or we can go and explore that. And I think that's where we make the huge positive gains.
I think so, too. I really do. And actually, what I'd love to do is give listeners right now a little kind of practice, a little reflection that you could do right now. And here's what it is. If everybody could just take a moment to think, what parts of myself am I shy to show? What parts of myself do I feel kind of tender about showing? Now, I'm not talking about what experiences in your life that you might want to share or not share. I'm talking about parts of yourself, aspects of your personality. And let me tell you that anything you come up with is going to feel awkward, but it's going to be gold. And in my book, Deeper Dating, that is the central point. That's actually the central point of everything I teach, is that those places where we feel the most tender, the most vulnerable, the most passionate, and we feel a little timid about showing them, those are the places where our deepest gifts lie. And when we embrace them and dignify them, everything changes. And one thing that changes most deeply is our intimacy lives. That's for another conversation, but these qualities that I call our core gifts are so important. The place that it relates to this here is that for each one of you, some of your core gifts lie outside of those tripwires, and you want to find what they are. So think about, in your relationship, what are the parts of yourself that maybe feel too tender to share, too vulnerable, they seem too sensitive or too out there? And what might be the parts of you that feel maybe too powerful to share? And think about those things and consider the possibility of one drop showing more of that in your relationship. That one drop will be so powerful. But I want to just say one thing about this. I want to step into my psychotherapist role, put my therapist hat on, and say, as there are amazing results, there can also be reverberations. So for everyone who's going to try these experiments that we're talking about, they could be scary. And that's why I'm saying just go a little drop. And some of us might feel an experience where after we do it, we get really mad at ourselves, or we feel really mortified or really ashamed, or we just like want to hide somewhere because of what we've done, or punish ourselves. That's called retribution. And that happens because you've broken past a boundary that somewhere deep inside you've decided, I am going to protect my well-being and my life, so I'm not going to step beyond that boundary. So when you get healthier and you step beyond that boundary, some part of you, some younger part of you, some deep inner part is going to say, what the heck did you just do? Are you crazy? This is horrible. You just embarrassed yourself. No one's going to love you anymore, or all of these kind of things. So just folks, if you do this and you get a backlash, you might not, but if you do, don't be surprised. It comes with the territory. It goes away, and then you'll have a little bit of more ground to work with. And if it's really difficult, then you might want to speak to a friend, to your therapist, because some part of you told you a long time ago, do not do this.
Ken, we love that exercise, and it's important to be able to do that, to take that pause, to be introspective, even if you don't initially share it with your partner, just taking that to work on for yourself. But I think creating another level of intimacy is it's going to be a good thing for your relationship. And that is a great way to do it.
And just to add on that, especially for those who are dating, you know, who are single, to do these exercises prior to getting into relationships so that they're attracting, like you said earlier, the person that will accept them and love them for being authentic.
You know it. You know it. Absolutely. And that you'll be able to say no to people that shame you for those qualities or don't know how to hold them or don't know how to embrace them. Absolutely. Because that's the thing in dating is like we present this airbrushed package of ourselves that is what we think looks attractive. The problem with that is going to attract people who don't love us for who we are. And then we're in trouble. If we get brave enough to dignify our authenticity and only stay with people that love us for who we are, then we're on the path to finding happy love. And that's just that's a pretty important deep thing. Would it be okay for me to share a personal story about this gender role concept?
Yes, please.
Great. So I am 62 years old, and I was single back in the days of AIDS, and I lived through the days of AIDS in a very intense way. You know, the people who I would pray before when the AIDS epidemic started, like two of the people that I prayed the most would not get it, both got it and died of AIDS. And one of them was my best friend, Michael. And so he was really sick and he was pretty close to dying. And I wasn't feeling anything. I was just kind of numb, which, you know, is understandable. But it was very troubling to me because I felt like very unloving. I just felt kind of frozen, like here's my best friend and he was my family in the world. I've never had a friend like him since then. And he was dying and I was numb. I was numb. I of course I cared and I was there for him, but I was kind of numb. So I went to a therapist who was very wise and really wonderful. And he said to me, he said, "You don't look numb. You look like you're feeling a lot." And I said, "Maybe, but I don't feel that way. I feel really numb." And he said, "Can you tune into a part of yourself deep inside, like way back hidden, that is feeling something?" And I took a minute and I went inside and I nodded my head. Yes, I could. And he said, "Tell me what that person inside who's able to feel looks like." And I had to cross a gender wire taboo here because the image that I got was of this big-hipped woman who was me and who was able to feel. And that was not what I was picturing, and it wasn't what I particularly wanted to be, but it was my authenticity, so I said it. And he said to me, "Can you learn from her?" And I allowed myself to feel this inner female who was able to cry and love and care and be part of the ebb and flow of the world and life and death and just be part of nature and part of humanity. And I said, "Yeah, I can feel her." And then finally the tears came and I cried so hard and so deep. And I was so relieved because I was finally feeling again. And it was a person inside of me that was feminine. And it was a part that I had never embraced. And, you know, the Native Americans, many Native American traditions have a definition of what is sacred. And they say that what is sacred is something that can bear having 2 feet in 2 different worlds at the same time. And at that moment, I was closer to being sacred because I was able to be my male self and my female self. And for all of us, it's an act of personal greatness to cross these taboos. And it's a gift to the people we love. Just that, like my letting myself feel in those last precious months before Michael passed away was a gift to me, and it was a gift to Michael, too. So I just wanted to share that, you know, kind of very personal story.
That is a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that. And when I think of that and you describe like that sense of relief and of crying, and I think we all carry that to a certain degree. It might not be, I mean, some people might have gone through it, or they are just able to naturally be extremely authentic. But I think there's always work to be done there. And you are going to have a better relationship with yourself, with your partner, with your future partner, if you put in that work and continue to do that, to explore, you know, what am I repressing in there? What am I yeah. afraid to share? Like you gave us that exercise of maybe because my parents always said big boys don't cry, or maybe because we see in the movies that men have to be tough, and it's only natural that these things shape us. But taking that pause and you might have that release, like that experience that you have, and I think it never ends. Like, we're constantly needing mm-hmm. to do that work, and it's worth it, and it's hard, but it's going to make your life better.
It's so true. It's so true. It is hard and it is scary. And you know what? If you have a partner that embraces and welcomes those parts of yourself, like my husband, I pretty much know that there's just about nothing I could do or share that is going to make him like step back or close down. He's got room for that. And that's such a gift, which does not mean it's not scary for me still. But if you're with someone who can embrace who you are, you've got a tremendous gift. And if you're single, or if you're in a relationship where you feel like your spouse cannot yet do that, who in your life can? Because those people are the ones that are going to help you take this step. Or what communities, like, for example, that dancing community, that's a community that is going to make it easier and normalize that freedom for you. So we all need people in our lives who are going to help us with this step, because it's beautiful, but it's scary.
Is there anything you would like to add directly for the LGBT community and the gender issues that they face in society today, and maybe some advice for them specifically that we didn't touch on before?
What a wonderful question. Thank you so much. And I had mentioned something about that before and didn't get to it. So yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This is what I want to say. John Gottman, who is one of the great researchers on couple dynamics, has been quoted as saying that wherever couples are in this world, wherever heterosexual couples are in this world, gay couples are about 50 years of evolution ahead of that. That's John Gottman saying that. And what he was speaking about is that in the LGBT community, gender freedom is more normalized. So like a male couple in most cases, a female couple in most cases, or a trans couple, or one member being trans in a couple, or just anyone single or coupled, is going to be much more likely to have a lot more gender freedom, because that's kind of who we are as LGBT people. We get more freedom. Guys can be more sensitive, more tender. They can be romantic with another guy, which is like the most like unguyish thing in the world from what we've been taught. And women can embody this spectrum more freely, because it's a spectrum that we all need to occupy freely. So what I want to say to LGBT folks is that you have a tremendous head start in this way, because it's less hard and less scary for you to break through those boundaries. Another thing I would say that's kind of a compliment, or an opposite of that, I guess more a compliment than an opposite, is that as LGBTQ people, we have been shamed for that very thing. And so we have a pile of shame that we need to work through, even if we might be flamboyant and free and out. Each one of us needs to look at how have we paid for being that, and where are we still paying? And where are we still making ourselves pay? Where are we not free to be that? Because in this particular way, of course not in all ways, but in this particular way, we're kind of holding the baton for humanity in terms of like the potential of having gender identities, sexual orientation, sex roles, gender roles, to be more freed up and more liquid. So there's a gift and there's also a challenge with this. And just, you know, encouraging everyone on the whole spectrum of humanity that our task is the same. And that task is to step into the river of our authenticity and to do it with kindness and generosity toward ourselves and others. And that's the grand message of intimacy for all of us.
That is such a beautiful metaphor. And, you know, we could do a whole other podcast just talking about gender identity and the LGBT community.
Sure, I'd love to.
I know. I mean, but why do you think, I think, you know, partly the fact that that community is more accepting within themselves of authenticity, but what do you think is the driver of that ability within that community to be more authentic from the get-go? It seems, and I know that might not be boiled down to a simple thing, but I think that's an interesting area to explore.
It is a very interesting area, and I would say that, you know, what's really interesting, Maladoma Somei, who is a very brilliant lecturer and workshop leader in the men's movement, who has a really amazing story. He was next in line to become a medicine man in his lineage in Africa, in Burkina Faso. And he was abducted by Christian missionaries, put in a Christian school until he was like 13, when he got into a fight and broke out, and then walked some vast amount of territory back to his village and said, I want to come back and I want to continue in my training. And they said, you can't, because you have one foot in each world now, but you can go out and teach this. So he does really big events, and at the culmination of these events, he's using the tribal methods. That these are tribal events that he teaches and uses. And at the very end of the event, the culmination is this point where participants need to step between earth and heaven, and only gay men can do that. And that's because in his tribe, only gay men or women, excuse me, can take that role on. And if you look cross-culturally at indigenous cultures again and again and again and again, you find that the people who do the funerals and who do the weddings are the people who are what they call two-spirit. And the reason again and again is that somehow their ability to be in the male and the female world, for whatever the reason that you know, so many LGBT people have that capacity, makes them closer to the sacred and more able to do that. Now, it doesn't make them better people in any way, shape, or form, but it's just a particular attribute that we've been shamed for that actually has tremendous gifts in it. And why that's so, I just don't know, but I can see how in world evolution, it matches the movement toward gender fluidity and gender freedom that cultures all around the world long for.
That's a great story. And what was the guy's name in the African?
Maladoma Somei.
Okay. Yeah. It's certainly, like I said, a big topic, but an interesting one, and one that there probably isn't a simple answer for, but certainly exploring that cross-culturally, biologically is interesting. And if anything, heterosexuals can learn from that. You know, we don't have to know exactly why it's occurring, but I remember one time we were out and there was a gay guy, and it was probably the only one in the bar, and he was just dancing super flamboyantly and just having a great time. And it seemed like there was just something that was just allowing him, and other people were dancing, but he was dancing more freely. And it's a beautiful thing. And you don't have to be gay to do that, obviously, but
no, you don't.
It seems
right.
Like that might come more natural sometimes because of the acceptance within the community. But it's a beautiful thing to watch. Like, I remember Sarah was like, man, that guy is having a good time. And I was like, yeah, you know, like, I want to, good for him. I want to, like, feel that sense of freedom of just not caring, you know, who is watching or how you look. And he seemed to be embodying that. So if anything, we can learn from that and become more authentically ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that's a great story. And I guess that is just so true, is that we really all need each other. We really need each other to become full human beings.
Well, Ken, this is great. And we could just go on and on.
We'll have you back again.
Yeah.
I'd love to.
And we appreciate you sharing all this great information. So why don't we finish up by having you tell our listeners where they can find you online, tell them about your podcast, and then we'll say goodbye.
Sure, I'd be glad to. So you can just go to deeperdating.com and you'll find out lots of information about me. If you want to find out about my podcast, which is just starting, which I describe as a wisdom-filled, research-backed toolkit for anybody seeking authentic love. It's for people who are single and looking for relationships, as well as for people that just want to deepen the relationships they have, although the focus is mainly for people who are looking for a really wonderful, healthy relationship. And you can also get my book, which is called Deeper Dating, How to Drop the Games of Seduction and Discover the Power of Intimacy. And my podcast is at deeperdatingpodcast.com.
Excellent. Well, we'll link to your website and your podcast in the show notes page, as well as all the other resources and exercises we talked about today in the episode. And we appreciate you so much for coming on the show, and we wish you the best of luck with your podcast. We're really looking forward to listening to it as well.
Oh, thank you so much. It was just a delight to get to speak with you both. Thank you.
Hey guys, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. As always, all the links are in the show notes page, as well as on the podcast description. And while you're on our website, we encourage you guys to check out our 14-day Happy Couple Challenge. We send you an email for 14 days with simple, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And on our website, we also have a bunch of free resources for your relationship. So we encourage you to check those out. We also have our Love Tribe on Facebook. We encourage you guys to join the tribe and be there for support for each other. If you have questions or just need some relationship advice, we are all here for each other. The group has grown to almost 1,000 people, and we love it. So we hope you guys join that. You can go to Facebook, Love Tribe Fam, and you'll find us right there. And if you are interested in learning more about our flagship course, Spark My Relationship, we hope you guys check it out. We have a special offer that is only for podcast listeners. So you can go to sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock, and you can unlock that special offer and learn more. As always, thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.
You were listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.